Well, I guess we're just going to do a show. That's what it's going to be. Because it's the news, according to me. Yeah, it is, what is it? It's June. It's June already. June 3rd, 7:10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. It is chilly in my basement this morning. We had to turn the air conditioner, it was actually working pretty hard yesterday. Got up to 80 degrees. I wouldn't say it's working hard, but it was working. And of course, that in the process causes the basement to be rather chilly because it's basement, all the cold air goes to the basement. So that the basement is still chilly this morning. I think it was 55 degrees out this morning or something. 58, maybe? Whatever it was. In the 50s, when I got up this morning, it's supposed to get up in the 70s again, I think, today, or possibly 80s. I'm not sure. It's supposed to get pretty windy. So there's your weather report for the day. Hello, I am your host, Kevin, and I am here to tell you what I think about the news. And it's all of its stuff. We have a few things going on. But the first, of course, the number one thing everybody wants to know is what's in my cup. Hey, because I got this cup here, and everybody wants to know what's in it. The entire world is looking and watching and waiting and wondering what's in my cup. I have, of course, my cup of chai. I just happened to open. I had to open a fresh batch of chai, a fresh container, of which most of my basement is stocked with about a half a ton of this stuff. I have in my backup cup, which is why I also have Almond Joy creamer in my chai, just a chai latte. In my backup cup, which I always have, it's always important, not always, but it's important to have a backup cup. If you don't have anything, sometimes I just have water. That's my primary everything when I'm on the road. In the studio, it's much more, potential is much more, and of course, I just made some more fresh sweet tea yesterday. Yes, peach tea, freshly brewed. Perfectly aged. Actually, I think I made it the day before. Did I make it the day before? I made it the day before. And it is just, it's just perfect now. It's just, that's after about 24 hours of the peaches soaking in the tea, it just, I cut up fresh peaches and put them in there. So that's my backup cup, which is really kind of my go-to. The hot chai is nice when it's cool down here in the basement, but yeah. In fact, I'm actually wearing a stocking cap. Tomorrow's show will theoretically be from the worldwide headquarters. I'm planning on doing a live broadcast from the or broadcast, whatever you want to call it, from the worldwide headquarters tomorrow. The still working on getting the software in place and just getting all that set up and ready to go. It's pretty. I have my old show template that I used to use. It was the News According to Me template. It just doesn't quite. There's a few things that haven't. It's kind of set up and sort of isn't. It's not really. I want to be able to do things with the. And I don't. I think my cat is coming down here to antagonize my puppy. Not sure what's going on there. He has to go through his regular gyrations here now. not sure what's happening. I have a 12-month-old Beauceron from France. He actually came from France. Came over on a plane. Yeah, we got all kinds of wacky things. Dog upstairs is barking. Dog downstairs is gonna. That's the way this day goes. So we have. A few things happening in the news we want to talk about. We have, by the way, there's no sponsor for this show. If you'd like to sponsor this show, go ahead and give me a call. You can call me or leave a message. You can leave a voicemail or a text at my hotline. Calling it the hotline. 812-379-8779. And leave a message there. Text, leave message, question, thought, comment. Let me know what you think about the news, as if anybody cares. And we will possibly play your little message and ridicule you for anything you might say. We'll all point and laugh. You'll feel like you're on the playground of school again. Maybe that was just me. I have a couple things in the news I want to talk about. One is the economic numbers. The Democrats' heads are popping off because they don't like the fact that the economy is going well. See, they're looking at all they care about is the next election cycle, which is going to be the 2026 election of next year. And this fall is when it really kicks off. It really starts. Now, the Dems have already started campaigning. Oh, I don't know why I put that campaigning in there. It's usually campaigning, campaigning. I don't know, whatever. Speak, I do. The campaign, whatever you want to call it, when Bernie and AOC were out running around the country talking about the oligarchy, protest against the oligarchy. Okay, let's protest the oligarchy. What are you going to do about it? Again, with these protests, exactly what are you trying to accomplish? They're trying to drum up support, trying to get people behind them, rally behind me, vote for me, and then I won't do anything about it. Because, well, there's not really anything we can do about it. That's the key to realizing how politics works in this country. You pick a hot topic, a hot topic. You pick the hot topic, you pick the political football that people are going to get behind and run with and, you know, build a wall, whatever it is. You rally the people. Not typical politicians, anyways, is the way they work. Get the people all riled up. Get into office and you totally forget about everything you campaigned on. And Nancy Pelosi laughed about the fact that this is the way it works. She literally had a reporter ask her, well, during the campaign, you campaigned on this. Oh, well, campaign. Campaign. Oh, well. Yeah, whatever. Oh, that's how that works. Okay, so that's how it is. So your campaign promises have mean nothing to that. Is that what we're supposed to take from that? Not exactly what she, that's exactly what she meant. Campaign promises are worthless. But at the same time, you know, they get out there and talk about the oligarchy as if they can do something about it. And there's, as if there is one, first of all, and they're always as every, to talk about democratic socialism, it is even worse in democratic socialism. Now, Bernie's not talking about democratic socialism. When he talks about democratic socialism, he's really talking about communism. He really wants communism based on a, and these people, these big government people, I don't understand. Even Jimmy Dore, who I greatly appreciate Jimmy Dore. I appreciate the fact that he's trying to get to the truth. He's trying to, you know, he uses comedy. He's a comedian, but he still tries to use, he's definitely a political comedian. And he doesn't wince bones about that. He is what he is. He's not saying he's not a, no, he's politically active in terms of what he's, he has a, definitely has an opinion about things. So, but he doesn't hide behind, oh, I'm just a comedian. I'm just a comedian. Well, he definitely has a political bent. But he's definitely gotten, now he doesn't, you know, he'll call out Democrats, he'll call out Republicans, he'll call out anybody. He's been very, I would say, soft on Trump. Because he realizes that the left-wing media is just over, just off their rocker. He doesn't have Trump derangement syndrome, even though he doesn't necessarily like Trump. He says he didn't vote for Trump. However, he certainly doesn't say too much bad about Trump. You know, other than just making fun of his personality. Now, but you get these people out there who are, What's the word I'm looking for here? I guess big government establishment type folks. I guess not even establishment type, but just the big government folks. The people who want to see more of a socialistic type of government. they don't understand. Then they call out the government and say, oh, look at this, these programs. Look at all this stuff they're doing. It's wasting and fraud and all this abuse. And all, they'll talk about all the bad things that are happening within the government organizations, the administration. To blame it on the administration, it's not just the administration. It's the fact that this is big government at work here. This is what big government looks like. And they seem to forget that fact. Oh, we need to take over this and do this right. Well, who's taking it over? What kind of structure, what kind of government system are you going to have that's going to be able to take that over and fix this administrative problem? Because you're just going to have another administration. You're going to have more bureaucracy. You're going to have more of the same. And you're going to have the same thing, just like healthcare. Well, we just need to have single-payer government healthcare. Government just change, take over the whole healthcare industry. This is the same government you've been ridiculing for how long? For all the waste and abuse and all the things they do that are just incredibly wasteful and unhinged. If we see what USAID has been doing. Speaking of which, this is one clip here. USAID, Bono, who has had... You know, he's a songwriter. He goes out, he performs, and he has thousands of people who fawn after him. By the way, they don't fawn after him because of his political opinions. They're not asking to, you know, put him, but of course, in this particular society, in this culture that we have now, they would probably want him to be president just because he's popular. It becomes a popularity contest. It has nothing to do with policy or one's ability. So Bono is being, I guess he's on Joe Rogan, and he brings up this thing about USAID. And he mentions that like 300,000 people have died or something. I'm going to play the clip because it's actually kind of interesting. And Joe Rogan, of course, Joe's been on the inside now of the administration. He's interviewed Elon Musk. He's talked to these guys. And he remembers this stuff. He's kind of got an inside scoop on what's going on here with all this stuff, and he's getting the facts. And once Joe, you know, talks to these people, he tends to, you know, he's very skeptical, but he's also very curious, and he's very good at listening. But let's talk, because notice how he lets Bono talk him, you know, get his full statement out before he says anything. Doesn't just pounce on him. I want to play this clip. This is courtesy of Sky News Australia, but it's a very interesting. It's just interesting how he plays this out and he whomps him over the head with it at the end. And I want to talk a little bit about the whole Bono thing as well. But apparently the statistics here he's picking up were completely off the charts, off the run. That was wrong. Let's see what we got here. Why doesn't it play?
Paid for money laundering. Here we go. Take a listen.
50,000 tons of food that are stored in Djibouti, South Africa, Dubai, and wait for it, Houston, Texas. And that is rotting rather than going to.
Now, first of all, it says 50,000 tons of food, all these places. Is that 50,000 tons in each of them, or is that 50,000 tons, 40,000 tons in Texas and 10,000, you know, what? What's the actual numbers here? He just lists off all these places. I assume that he means cumulative tons of food. That's the total number of amount of food that's rotting in the warehouses. It's rotting because it's not getting really. So this food apparently it only had a shelf life of about 3 or 4 months because that's all the longer this administration has been in. What? DOGE hasn't been enacted that long, hasn't stopped anything for that amount of time. So we're 6 months into this presidency. You're telling me that food can't last that long? It's rotting. To use terms like that just makes it sound like it's just going bad. It's all going bad. And then it doesn't tell you where it's at, you know, or it tells you where it's at, but not how much is in each place. So we're supposed to 50,000. What a nice even number, 50,000 tons. But he goes on. He goes on to talk about people who are dying now.
Gaza, rather than going to Sudan.
For sure, there have been...
There was more to that interview. Rather than going to Gaza, rather than going to Sudan, all this stuff. He says there's some 100,000 people. I think it's 300,000 people have died or whatever. But now Joe comes back in. This has been clipped. So this is, like I said, this is courtesy of you. This guy is Australia. So we'll go from here.
A lot of organizations that do tremendous good all throughout the world. Also, for sure, it was a money laundering operation. For sure, there was no oversight. For sure, billions of dollars are missing. In fact, trillions that are unaccounted for, that were sent off into various... They don't
NGOs.
Even know where, because there's no receipts. The way Elon Musk described that, he said if any of this was done by a public company, the company would be delisted and the executives would be in prison.
That is the case. If this was done by a public company, it would be a Bernie Madoff type thing. This would be a ridiculous. And this is exactly what this is. About 10 to 20% of the money that was going into through USAID was probably doing some humanitarian aid somewhere, but it probably wasn't even anything we would even approve of. Or many of those wouldn't be approved of. The problem is most of this money was sent to organizations like Feed the Hungry or actually a local organization. Feed the Children, Feed the Little Children that are hungry over in the poor. All kinds of different names of these organizations that were in title only. They weren't doing any kind of feeding of anything. They were just, you know, save the such and such from this organization, you know, a NGO. Oh, okay, it looks good on paper because we gave money to this, we gave money to that. And when you look at the funds that were given to these organizations, it makes it look like, because it's, well, this organization says it's, you know, Give All the Children Lollipops organization. How could that possibly be bad, other than, you know, what happened to their teeth? But they were sugar-free lollipops, by the way. So it's just one of those things where, you know, you look at that, but then the organization actually has ties to, you know, Act Blue or something like that. I mean, just whatever it is, that money gets funneled back to other political issues, other political things. And, of course, you have all the people on the top of those organizations skimming off the top. Now, Stacey Abrams, in my opinion, was doing this a little bit too publicly recently. Was it $2 billion? I think it was $2 billion. Or was it $200 million? I think it was $2 billion. I don't think it was $200 million. That just doesn't sound like enough. I started an organization literally with about $180 in the bank or something. It's a ridiculous amount of money. I can't remember. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a financial counselor. And I don't know all the specifics on the numbers. I just know that there was like hundreds of dollars in a bank account that she started that they were applying for and received approval for. Some ridiculous amount of money. Even though it was $200 million, it's still ridiculous. And it was all through an organizational type thing, like USAID type thing. I think it might have been USAID, actually. Because she was starting this NGO. And, of course, the NGO had a name. The whole thing is a money laundering operation. That's how the whole thing works. It's a grift. And it goes all the way back to that kind of stuff. And that's where all this money has been going. And they just keep printing more and more of it, and they just keep doing more. And this is why they have to keep these big bloated government agencies funded with all this money, because it is a nothing but a money laundering. I would say it's not even money laundering operation. It is a scalping operation from the nation's coffers, from our pockets. And we wonder why we're paying so much money in taxes. When we start doing the math, you start looking at how much money Americans make. It's not just that. It's not just, say you have 100 million people in the workforce. And of course, all of them making, you know, the average wage of each of those Americans, each of those jobs, including part-time jobs. How much money is coming in? And how much they are paying in taxes on the income that they're making? Then you look at the average amount of money everybody is spending, which is actually more than they're making. The because of you have to take in, now I'm going to get to this, but you have to take in the debt as well. Just the average amount of money that people are spending, and that equates to a certain amount of sales tax also that's being paid. And then you look at, and that includes, you know, included in fuel and everything else that they're paying for the gas in their car and that kind of thing. All these things start to add up, all the taxes that you're paying, on top of the taxes that are added in. It's not a value-added tax, but it is a tax. When corporations are paying taxes, for instance, if a corporation pays a corporate tax on their profit or whatever they pay, that tax gets passed on. It's part of the cost of their product. They're not just going to absorb that. Oh, look, we got hit with these taxes. Now I guess we can't make any more money. Because no, they just raise the price of their product. So the consumer ends up paying those taxes. It's kind of by de facto, you end up paying that tax because it makes the price of goods go up. I'm not saying they shouldn't pay taxes. I'm just saying that's what happens. We're the ones paying for that, which is fine. Problem is it puts more control into the government's hands, the government officials. I mean, when you talk about communism being the definition of communism is that the government has the control of the means of production. If you don't think that the government controls the means of production now, we are half a step behind Russia in that respect. The only thing you can't do, like here, you can just go out and start a business of your own. You can do it without a license. People don't have to get a business license here. That's not the case. You can just start a business anytime you want to. You can start selling, buying, selling. You can do a sole proprietor business out of your garage, out of your house, you can rent a building. You can build a building. You can do what, but you can do all these things all as a sole proprietor without an LLC, without any kind of business license. I used to think you had to have a business license to start a business. That is not the case. In fact, I requested one from the state of Indiana at one point, way back when I first started my first business. And it's just a registration fee. It's ridiculous. And they want you to pay it every year. It's like $100 and some. I had a little business. I couldn't even afford I had a hard time paying that every year. It was like $120. Of course, this is back in the 80s. $120 was half your rent. But it's a fake, phony thing. You don't have to have a license here. But people think you have to have that. Nowadays, it's not done so much. People don't even pay attention. I don't even think that. I'm sure the agency still exists because people are still out there thinking you have to do that. Now, there are some cities where you have to have a registration with the city to hang a shingle and do business. I wouldn't do it. It's a bogus, phony thing. I've got a business right now in the city of that's nearby here, and it is a very I would say left-leaning city, just because of the typical government they typically use here and some of the things that they do. Very leftist style government, and they have done all kinds of crazy things. They've tried to raise my property taxes. They've tried to do all kinds of stuff. I always fight back on it. I go right downtown and get in their face. But that's, if I have time to do that, I just do it. And it's not something I put up with anymore. They pretty much have gotten off my back. One of the issues was there was a particular board member that wanted to buy my property. So he was trying to crack down on everything for my property and try to go after me and trying to get me discouraged into selling it. So he's trying to get me to do is just trying to get rid of it. Oh, I'm just going to get rid of it. It's not happening. Started sounding like a cartoon character. So that kind of politics always plays into some things as well. But the bigger the government gets, my point in this whole thing is big government. And these people want to have government take over and do things. Well, government needs to take over this, just take this over. And yet at the same time, they're realizing that big government is not working. Well, people just need to take – well, people are too busy with their little lives to really get involved in government. That's the biggest problem we've got right now is that the government's supposed to be four of them by the people, and it's supposed to be so small that we can actually manage it. It's kind of the point now where the bureaucracy is much bigger than we can even watch. You know, they can distract us with one thing, and all of a sudden the bureaucracy runs away from us, and we can't take care of it. And they know that. It's all part of their little scheme, these bureaucrats. They just love spinning things. So we have all that going on. And I just wanted to say, throw that out there for the minute. The big topics, this is Topical Tuesday, by the way. It seems like this is like, I'm losing track of the days right now because I've been off for so long. Can't tell what day it is. Can't usually tell what day it is anyway. So you have these guys out campaigning, and of course now they're all concerned about the 2026 election. They think they're trying to make this a referendum against. They think Trump is on the ballot in 2026, in a sense, he kind of is, but not to their extent. Not the extent that they think so. The left again, all the politicians. This is where keep an eye on these people. If you're interested, keep an eye on them. Watch the people who make a big deal out of the polls. They are the polished professional politicians who think that the polls make all the difference in the world and that's all that matters. And the reason being is, and it kind of does, even among the Republican establishment, and even I would say even upon some of the Republicans that are just trying to hang on to their jobs. Because if all they want is the job, they'll care about the polls. And if the president's down in the polls, they're going to back away from their association with this president. That's what's going to happen. Now, what's happening right now is the job numbers, the recession numbers, the economic numbers are all coming in better than they've been in the last 4 years. This is making the Democrats' heads pop off. In fact, they've just – the one organization is the CBP, whatever it is, the budget office, the supposedly nonpartisan budget office or whatever it is, projection office, has just come out and said that the recession that they were forecasting has now been revoked. They're not forecasting a recession now. That's been turned around, rescinded or whatever. Of course, that just makes the Democrats even more angry because now they realize that everything that they were throwing out there as a projection. Oh, we're heading for a recession. We're heading for a recession. All the economists are saying we're heading for a recession. For the worst economic downturn ever because of the tariffs. Tariffs are killing us. Now they're calling Trump a chicken for chickening out on the tariffs. No, it's called negotiation, and it's just you guys don't have the guts to do it. I've talked about this before. It's like walking in to buy a used car, and I just did this recently. A car listed on eBay. It was out in the West Coast. It was I think they were asking 10 something. I'll get into the actual numbers on this thing. They're selling it for 10.5 or something like that. Oh no, this is the one down in Florida I'm thinking of. It's a car down in Florida. And I was thinking, okay, so I think they were asking 10.5 for it. Or 10.2, something like that. And so I called him up. I said, "Hey, I've got an offer for you. 9.5 out the door. That includes a 30, you know, whatever temporary tag, so I can get it home. I'll be down there tomorrow with the cash. Drive it off the lot, and this is how much cash I'm bringing. You make it work. Taxes, whatever your fees are, because they always have these little. Oh, we have a $300 delivery fee, $300 this fee, $300 that fee, and." He came back and he said, "Well, that's a little less than what we, you know, normally, quite a bit less than what we would normally be able to do." He goes, "I'll talk to my manager about it." Of course, I'll talk to my manager and see what we can do. He came back. The best they could do was 11.5. This is a car that's listed for 10.5. "Well, because of the taxes and the fees and everything we have to put on it, it would normally be 12.5 out the door, but we can get it to you for 11.5. I'm like, no. I'll pass. There's no counter offer, no nothing. I'll just pass. I was waving cash in front of your face here. I would be down there tomorrow and drive it off the lot for you. You make a cool $500 or whatever you're going to make on the car. I don't care what it is. You're going to make some money on the car. I'm sure they didn't pay $9,500 for that car at auction. It's a, you know, why not take the cash in the moment instead of waiting for something else later on that you got to do all this finagling around with? So, needless to say, the car went away on eBay. All, you know, the listing ended. It went away. My puppy just came in and laid down behind me. I saw, so sweet. So all of a sudden the car popped back up again. And now it's $9,500. I said, well, hey, the offer still stands. $9,500 out the door cash. No, I can't do that because I went on the whole thing. I was, you know, $10,500, whatever the amount was, is the best we can do. Nope, not going to do it. I just saw yesterday, cars pop back up again. $9,250. That's what the listing says. It's almost deceptive. And what really aggravates me about this is because, you know, you're basically adding about $2,000 onto the value, onto the price of the car. And that to me seems like it's fake advertising. It's because, you know, you win this, and what makes it deceptive is there's always this little valuation thing that eBay puts on there. It's this little valuation thing down at the bottom. It says, this is a good, $92,500 is a good value because, you know, most cars this year with this miles, all this stuff on it, they figure in the, like the Kelley book value type thing. They'll look at it and they'll look at that and they'll say, well, it's worth about $10,500. So you're getting a good value at $9,925. And that's the problem. So now you go, I'm going to get a good value at $9,925. And of course, all the taxes and fees and stuff out the door, then I've got to pay, you know, more. Well, no taxes. You got to pay taxes. Well, taxes, okay, yeah, but not the fees. All the fees that you throw in there on top of it that you don't always disclose, that, you know, you just kind of put them all in the paperwork and you don't really let anybody know about it. There's about $750 in fees on top of this whole thing. They're just going to the dealer for nothing, for not doing anything for you. It's like they're charging you for the price of them doing business. It should be in the price of the car. So it's just a ripoff, in my opinion. The only place you do save on that is if you pay excise tax back in your state. You're paying tax on the $92,500 instead of $11,500, whatever it is. But it's just a phony way of doing it. You got to really watch these auctioneers, and you've got to really watch the fine print on some of these. Because if you win the auction, you think you're going to buy the car for that amount, and all of a sudden you got to pay more. When you buy a car from an individual, by the way, you don't do that. The person lists the car. You do the bid. You do if it's listed as a you know, buy it now price or whatever it is, or if it's an auction price, you buy it for that price. They don't charge you extra fees on top of that. The dealerships do that. And it's in my opinion, very shady business dealings. So, and this happened also on the West Coast. I was looking at a car out there. Same thing. I asked him about the price. Now, they actually had the actual price listed. I came in with a lowball offer, like I always do, because I always pay cash. And so that I said, no, I'll be out there tomorrow. I'll give you this much in cash. And I think it was a Volvo XC70. It had very low miles on it. It was in the 80,000 mile range. Extremely low for a 2012. Or maybe it was 2015. It was 2015. Had a hitch, had all kinds of stuff on it. It was exactly the car that I wanted. But I wasn't willing to pay that much for it. And because I just know the value. The used car values, they're being... What's the term? They're being artificially inflated right now. And I don't know why. I don't know what the thinking is right now with the dealerships. If they're thinking, well, we're thinking the economy is going to turn around and used cars are going to be worth something again. That's not going to happen unless they start selling some new used cars, get those up. Because people aren't buying new cars right now. Prices are too high. They are giving all kinds of incentives for purchase. They made the mistake of becoming a bank. They're selling you the financing. They don't care about the car. They're selling you the financing. They're just producing the car, selling you the financing. want to get you in the payments. And they get you in the door. They play all kinds of tricks on you to get you to sign the paperwork. And then you realize you're paying, instead of paying $50,000 for a new car, you're paying, you know, $75,000 by the time it's all done. On a car, it's only going to be worth like about $30,000 by the time you, if you're lucky, and if, by, you know, and you won't even be, you'll be underwater in that car within about 2 years. In other words, if you tried to sell it and paid off with the loan, you won't be able to do it. Anyway, like I said, I'm not a financial counselor. So we have, you do your own research and do your own stuff and figure it out. All right, so we have a lot of times it's just basic math, and it's just knowing what it's like to be in business and wanting to move your inventory, keep it rolling. That's just the biggest thing. When you have a car sitting on a lot for more than 30 days, people who are driving by the lot, people who are looking at the lot, they see that car sitting there. It's still sitting there. 2 months it's been sitting there. After a while, they're like, "What's wrong with that car?" I start questioning because it's like, why is that car? And why does that car keep popping up on eBay? Both of these cars, by the way, that I've talked about are still popping up on eBay. They haven't sold. And the prices keep going down. And my offer still stands for both of them. If you're listening, my offer's still standing. And it's, but I don't know. Sometimes their ego gets in the way and they won't eat crow. They won't come back and say, okay, well, we'll do this now. Fine, whatever. I've already bought one. I haven't bought one yet. I've just been always kind of shopping and looking because it's always good to kind of have something catastrophic happens, which just happened with one of my cars. I'm having an engine replaced right now, but it's still a good solid car. And if it's just the engine, I'll just go ahead and replace it and keep it going another 300,000 miles. As far as I'm concerned, I think that's what it's going to do. It looks like, so I'm just going to keep going. Anyway. I'll probably get another 200,000 miles out of it because it's, putting in a used engine. So who knows what's going to happen with it. I need to give them a call. So that's just one of the points I was trying to make. I don't know where I started with that whole thing, that whole conversation. I don't know how I got into cars. Because you never know what kind of bunny trail is going to go down this show. That's the problem with this show. And it's also it's what makes it exciting because you never know where I'm going to go. Next thing you know, I'm talking about planets and other solar systems and other dimensions. And I'm talking about the minutia of horse manure. You never know. You never know what I'm talking about. So here's a question for you. Oh, but speaking of it, we're talking about the economy. And one of the things that I think is important to realize, what's been done here in the last 6 months is, or sub 5 months, we have got all kinds of foreign, because of the tariff negotiations that have happened. The country is truly set up. Now, I believe, I keep talking about the golden age. You've heard this term, we're entering a golden age of America. Another golden age. We could potentially be in a golden age, so to speak, barring any kind of weird catastrophic events or whatever is going to happen here. We could potentially have a golden age economically if something weird doesn't happen. With regard to job opportunities, economic growth, potential, value of our dollar, value of an hour of work. And here's where it gets a little tricky. And this could be a point of failure for our nation, or it could be a point of incredible, incredible economic blessing on our nation. I have some concerns about our nation because of our culture. But let's just talk about it this way. The nation has just made these deals. This administration has just made these deals with other countries. We have almost $14 trillion in foreign investments coming into this country in the next 5 years. Do the math on that. That's almost $3 trillion a year coming into the nation in investments. Now, what happened there was some foreign country builds cars. Let's say they build a car. And they want to sell that car here in this nation, in this country. Well, that's going to cost you a 25% tariff in order to sell it here. Well, okay, that makes the price of the car ridiculous. It's not going to be competitive with the cars that we build here in the U.S. So what those foreign nations are doing are saying, well, we're going to send our manufacturing facility. We're going to build a manufacturing facility right there in the U.S. We're just going to manufacture in the U.S. and then we'll avoid the tariff that way. Now, it could just be an assembly plant, but either way, they're avoiding the tariff, the price of the tariff. They might only pay, you know, a fraction of what they would have because of the import fees and stuff that they're going to use to get the components sent here. So they're investing this money in infrastructure. They're investing in buildings, in marketing, trucking, all the things that have to go into having a manufacturing warehouse, manufacturing and warehousing, and all those other things. All that has to be invested in order for that to happen. So they're investing, say, some auto company over in Europe is going to invest $1 billion or more, or a couple billion dollars in infrastructure here just to start building the cars here. Now you look at that. There's all kinds of construction workers, construction equipment that's going to have to expand. We're going to have growth in terms of more construction equipment, more backhoes, more cranes, more excavators, all these things that have to happen, all the cement that's going to have to be produced, all the steel for the buildings, all the, you know, everything that has to go into the building of that building before even one car rolls off that line. And this is happening with multiple hundreds of investors coming here. This is all very well and good. Now, once that line gets set up and going, guess what? Now they have a need for, say, some plant needs 500 workers to work in the plant. You're creating hundreds of times over and over again. You're talking about, you know, possibly, you know, a million jobs in the process of all this happening, just in the hiring to do those manufacturing jobs, just that alone. Every factory that goes into a place like this, and this has happened everywhere. You look at little Marietta, Ohio, or wherever you look at it, just anytime there's a major manufacturing company that comes into town, all of a sudden around that manufacturing business are what I call sprout businesses. All the businesses that need that I'm not going to say leech off of that business, but it is kind of that way. They're not parasites, they're not leeches, but that's kind of how they work. They, because that business is there, people have to take a lunch break. For instance, very simply, people have to take a lunch break. Where are you going to get lunch? Well, there's new restaurants opening up all around this factory because there's 500 people here eating lunch every day. And these little restaurants want that market. They want, you know, so somebody puts in a McDonald's. The next thing you know, they got a, you know, Culver's. The next thing you know, they got a whatever it is, all start sprouting up. Well, those people also have to buy gas to get back and forth to work. So now the gas stations start rising up. Of course, they sell pizza and sushi. So they got all that stuff going on. So there are all these other vendors that are happening around the support of these people that are there. And of course, all those other people who are there to support the people who are there, the 500 that started there, 500 workers, all have to have support as well. They need groceries. They need to buy things. All that stuff starts happening. The key point, so all these jobs are going to be opening up. Now we are already at a negative. I heard Mike Rowe talk about this the other day. I think we are at a net $500,000 people shortage right now in terms of manufacturing jobs, I believe. And I don't think that includes trade jobs. I think it's just manufacturing. People have got to step up, and people have got to start working, and that's where the incentives have to happen. Now, of course, incentives from an employer perspective is, well, if I provide enough money and I provide enough benefits, people will come to work here. Maybe. But now we have to compete. You see, this is where it gets really aggravating for me, and for every working professional out there. I worked in the airline industry for many years, and when you first entered the field of aviation as a pilot, sitting in the right seat at a new hire position in the right seat in an airline, for example, you got paid peanuts. My first year at an airline, this is back in the day when $18,000 was a lot, was more money than it is now. But it was definitely below poverty level. But my first year in the airline industry as a right seat first officer, made $18,000. That was my, I think that was my gross income, or that was my net income, I guess you should say. I think my gross was 20. I think maybe it was less. I think it was 24,000 or something like that was my gross. I think 18,000 was what I actually took home. My year to date, I saw my year to date last paycheck of the year said 18,000 something of what my take home pay was first year. I almost cried. I looked at that. I thought, just, I'm never going to make any money in this industry. I'm never going to, you know, this never going to make it as a pilot. This is just ridiculous. And of course, it was at that time I'd already been awarded captain on another airplane at the same company, and the pay was going to be increased. But I didn't realize how much it was going to be increased, and it was more than three times the next year what I made, which was comfortable at that time. It was a comfortable wage at that time. Not, I would say, anything, you know, fantastic or outrageous, but it was, at least it was a living wage, even though I was blowing it all on a stupid boat project I was working on. I also was working on a business. I was trying to get a business off the ground. I was investing most of my money into that. Which turned out to be a, you know, the 2008 came along, kind of swept all that under the rug. But the, thanks a lot, among other things. But you move on, you know, you just keep going, and you keep going with it. And, I, you know, had a wife that was patient through all that stuff. As patient as any human being could be. So we ended up with that's the kind of stuff you get into with regard to economics. Now, when you start raising the minimum wage, I'm hearing talk, minimum wage has to be a livable wage, $15 an hour. Here again, we're getting back to centralized government dictating what the minimum livable wage is. You can't do that. This is kind of like saying, well, we're going to flatten the curve by, you know, everybody stays home for 2 weeks. It doesn't work that way. The world isn't that small. You have pockets of where the pandemic, where the virus is spreading, and other places where it's not. So everybody stays home for 2 weeks. Well, you still have essential workers out there. So how do you do this? Because it's still going to spread, but now it's going to spread into a place where there's little pockets here and there, where there's little towns that hadn't been hit by it yet at all. They're taking 2 weeks off for nothing because now it's still going to hit their town 2 weeks from now, and then it's going to explode there. You can't do that. And this is the same thing with minimum wage. It might, there are places in this country where it's triple. You might be able to make a living on $15 an hour here. You might go, you know, you move to New York City or wherever you're going to go. You can't make it there on $15 an hour on a 40-hour a week job. So it's one of those, it's weird that you think, you know, if you had $45 an hour, you could probably make a comfortable living wage there. And we're not talking about comfortable living wage. We're just talking about living wage. And then again, you get into what is a living wage? Does that mean that the wages are going to provide me with a rent, with gas for my car? Am I going to have a car? Am I going to have – and some places you don't even have to have a car. The public transportation in Chicago is so good, you don't even own a car. So, you know, car insurance, car expenses, all those gone. Parking, nothing. You don't have to have any of that. But your rent is ridiculous. And the taxes you pay are ridiculous. So does that include, you know, a cell phone? Does that include Xbox, play my games? What does that include? What is a living wage? What kind of living we're talking about? What kind of standard of living are we talking about? None of that is just $15 an hour. They need to raise it because they're trying to get everybody on the same wage. What their goal is, and I don't think they realize this, what they're doing. I think this is all. And when that happens, I think it's more spiritual than it is actual mentally contemplated. These people get out there and they want this minimum wage thing raised. Okay, now if a nurse making good money, if you're in an economic situation where $25 an hour is good money, good pay, and the minimum wage is $5 an hour, there's enough disparity there between the two that people are motivated to be a nurse. Well, I got to get out of this, you know, minimum wage thing. I want to get my education. I want to get certified and get my nursing so I can make that $25 an hour. If you're making $15 an hour at McDonald's or more, that little $10 an hour, I mean, it's $400 a month or a week difference between the two. But you can make it now. You're comfortable at minimum wage. You shouldn't be comfortable at minimum wage. That's the whole point. You need some incentive. Folks, our culture does not just say, well, just I want to make more money because I want to make more. No, people will sit back, make enough money to get by, and that's what they will do. There's a segment of our population. There are some people who have a calling to be a nurse. They'll just do it regardless. There are probably people so called to be a nurse or so called to be whatever it is, a plumber, whatever it is in society, pilot, whatever it is. I know when I was a pilot, growing up, cutting my teeth back in the 90s, I would fly for free. I was trying to build time. I was trying to get my time up there. I just wanted to get a decent job flying an airplane, and I would do anything to do it. I was willing to fly for practically nothing just to build my time. Because time was what, you know, every time you went to apply for a job, well, our insurance requires you have 2,500 hours, and I only had, you know, 1,800 hours or whatever. Oh, gee, I got to get more time so I can get this, you know, 700 hours in there so I can get my, or whatever it was. So you're willing to just do whatever to get that, you know, fly anything and fly everything to be able to get that time up there so that you can qualify to be, of course, then they always raise the, you know, well, now you need 3,000 hours. Well, whatever, guys don't want to hire me, you're just playing on the insurance company. So that, I mean, there's just, you know, all those kinds of games they play too, but the disparity between the two needs to go up, and it needs to go up proportionally. So say the minimum wage goes from $5 to $15. That's three times. So that's three times where it is now, or what it was at $5 an hour. I think, what is the minimum wage right now? $5.25, something like that. Federal minimum wage? It's state minimum wage. I don't know. Say it's five. We're just using numbers for easy thinking here. So say it's $5 an hour minimum wage, and they raise it up to 15 across the board. Well, now some of these professional jobs or more the internships or whatever you're getting, where you're getting say $20 an hour, nobody's going to have the incentive to do that. First year pay on a, you know, so you're talking about for pilots even. First year pay is, now you're competing with those jobs. Not so much anymore. It kind of comes and goes with the pilot shortage thing. Right now, there's a little bit of a glut of pilots, but that's not going to last long. There's going to be a shortage again here, I would say, sometime this year. potentially as early as this month. It could actually start kicking in. I would say sometime in June, but it could be later in the fall. Now, especially with all this investment kind of happening, because it ramps everything up. My concern is there's not going to be enough workers. Is our culture? I don't know if our culture will need to step up and start working in the golden age that we're calling for right now. With all the investment, everything that's happening, hopefully, my hope is that the young people of today, and there's a strange phenomenon happening at the same time. There is a younger generation right now. The graduates from high school, the college age, I'm not saying college attendees, college age, which includes both, who have a much more, I think, positive outlook for America than what we give them credit for. The ones who are getting out of college right now, very pessimistic. They do not see any way that they're going to ever own a home. They're just kind of looking at renting. They think they're going to be in debt the rest of their lives. Because they chose a degree in... social basket, whatever they chose their crazy degree in. And they wonder why they're not going to make it. But the... they think they're going to get out of college and have the... as soon as I had my commercial license in aviation, I had 250 hours. 250 hours of flight time. I got my commercial multi-engine license. Now I can go out there and get a job. I started banging on everybody's door. Thinking, hey, I got my commercial multi. Oh, well, you're going to need some more time before you can start riding around with me. Oh, even just riding the right seat. It's a single pilot airplane. Keep in mind, I had my commercial multi-license. Now, what I went out and did is I went out and got my commercial multi-instructor license. My MEI, as they call it. Multi-engine instructor license. So now, anytime I'm in the right seat of an airplane, even if it's a single pilot operation, I can give him dual, and I can log that as PIC time. I give him dual instruction, and I can log it as PIC time. So that's what I did. I went out and got that, and it took me a while to get that. I had to get my single-engine instructor license, and I got my multi-engine instructor license, and also my instrument instructor license. So I was able to do all that stuff. I started a flight school. And my time built up very quickly. That's just the way I did it. Now, I had to have some incentive. I wasn't making any money during that whole thing. I was investing everything I had back into the aviation career. That year in 2001, when I was awarded captain and actually started making money, it all seemed like it was worth it. However, it was worth it. Really didn't see the worth in it until I went back into aviation again in 2018. In a little different place in life, a little different place in our finances. Got back into the industry then. But then you have mandatory retirement at 65. So it's kind of one of those, it's a bittersweet thing. So the whole point of this whole thing is our nation, our culture, our kids have to step up. People have to step up and start working. When the government's paying you to not work, which I think is part of the incentive, part of the economic situation we've got with this, people just pulling people pulling people off the waste, fraud, and abuse, because now you're going to have to go out and get a job. The beauty of this is you're needed. Our country needs you to work here now. All these illegal aliens that they're throwing out of the country that hopefully they're self-deporting because they can come back full-fledged citizens and probably get, companies to give them grants they're going to need workers. They're going to need people to fill those seats. They're going to need people to work those machines, to do whatever we're doing here. I guarantee you, we're going to need workers. And I hope, it is my hope that people step up and start working. Because they're not, all these jobs aren't going to be easy jobs. They're going to be hard jobs, some of them. Not going to be cush jobs where you just, you know, come in and take pictures of yourself, and you're not content creators for, you know, for whatever social media group. It's going to be tough work. You're going to be doing a, you know, operating a screw gun, you know, turning a screw, turning whatever it is, you know, operating, you know, cutting metal, whatever, and wearing some gloves because your hands are going to get calluses. This is going to be tough, but I think it is going to be an incredible time for our nation if people step up. And there's a big if there. I'm hopeful. I think we have a situation where people will step up. Especially, I think the post-COVID thing era is over now. I think people are looking for some dignity in the work that they do. Actually work and do something and be productive. I think it's happening. I think. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong about all that. I don't know. I hope I'm not wrong. I hope I'm right. That's going to be a positive thing in our nation. We'll see what happens. So many other things I want to talk about today, especially this attack out in Colorado, what the Democrats are doing. But we'll talk about that tomorrow. Just a lot of stuff. People, I want to get back to the whole campaign thing, what's going on with all that, because I believe that the left is starting to campaign already for 2026 as well as 2028. They're looking for a leader. They want someone to step up and be the leader of the party. And they're all kind of vying for that position all at the same time. And unfortunately, they're all fighting each other, beating each other over the head, you know, in the meantime. And I'll talk about that a little bit more tomorrow and what's happening, what I believe is happening with the Democrat Party as well as what's happening with the Republican Party. And because I think that's even as much of a question right now as far as 2028, what's going to happen with the Republican Party. However, I think there's some good things happening. But in the meantime, folks, continue to pray for our nation, pray for the leaders, pray for each other. God bless. Shalom. Have a great rest of your day. And I'll see you tomorrow. See ya. By the way, call the show.